Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Candace Parker is along with us tonight.
And moments ago, Kristen Ledlow.
Parker, what a look inside.
Kristen Ledlow is on our sideline
with the terrific Candace Parker.
I'm Kristen Ledlow.
I'm Candace Parker.
And this is Ledlow and Parker.
This is episode 4 of Ledlow and Parker. I'm Kristen Ledlow. She's the LA Rams biggest fan.
All right. Whoa. I'm a Todd Gurley fan. I'm the Bears fan through and through.
Just saying, we all saw it.
Just need to set the record straight.
We all saw it. Well, speaking of LA, we'll also talk about LeBron and Kobe. We'll talk about Colin Kaepernick and perception versus reality when it comes to athletes. And later, we'll welcome in Trae Young, the NBA and social media sensation.
Yeah, Trae definitely made me feel old in this episode.
Same.
I will handle it with dignity and class.
You certainly messed up a lot more than I did.
I think all of us just want to leave the league better than when we came into it.
And that's what we said.
That's what we said.
What we said.
That's what we said.
That's what we
That's
said.
That's what we said. Our takes on the hottest topics. First and foremost, Candace, Kobe sitting courtside, Hawks and Lakers, the Atlanta Hawks in town. He sits there for the first time all season at Staples Center, supporting LeBron and the Lakers. Gives LeBron a hug. LeBron posts about it. Kobe does not. I've got to ask you, does your competitive nature allow you to welcome or even to root for the guy you're supposed to be passing the torch to?
Well, actions to me speak louder than words. And in this case, you said it. LeBron tweeted about it or Instagrammed about it, and Kobe did not. And it is Kobe's turf. And I feel as though this is the first game that Kobe has attended really as a fan. I mean, he's been to more Sparks games than he has, you know, as a fan of Lakers. And I think it's more of a competitive thing with Kobe. I mean, he's been one of the most competitive players that we've known. It can't be easy for somebody like LeBron, who is great, still hunting for championship rings, played against each other in your prime.
That's what I was going to ask. Does it make it different or perhaps make it worse that this is not somebody coming a generation after you, but somebody you competed against when you were both at your very best?
And this isn't a David Robinson, Tim Duncan type of thing where David Robinson is on his way out and he passes the torch to Tim Duncan.
Playing on the same team.
Playing on the same team, and then he kind of passes it down. This is LeBron coming from Cleveland, in which they fought against each other. In the championship, four championships, in their prime, and he's coming to your franchise. Me, if you're asking me, it would be a little bit tough.
Really?
Yeah, it's Kobe's turf. And Kobe seems like he's super competitive and, you know, he's showing his support for sure. But the competitive in Kobe has to be a little bit like, nah.
Because the post says something to the effect of, I'm trying to carry the torch or further what you started. But at any point, are you as a competitor thinking, well, I didn't pass you that torch?
Somehow, I think is, as we've said, as competitive as Kobe is, was, still is.
Still is.
Still is.
Come on.
I don't think that he's giving that torch up. And it was super special to see, for me especially, that he brought his daughter, and his daughter has interest in going to see. And then we find out later, you know, Trae Young, she loves Trae Young. That's one of her favorite players. So, you know, maybe that had something to do with them coming to the game. But at the end of the day, I do think it would be tough to sit and watch one of the people that you've battled against year after year playing in your arena wearing a Lakers jersey across the chest. I don't know. That would be tough.
So I asked you the questions from Kobe's perspective because that's essentially who you are and what you are in LA now. So it's easier to make that comparison. Do you, though, perhaps understand LeBron's side and wanting that not only acceptance, but to see him courtside rooting you on as well?
Well, LeBron has done nothing wrong. He's done what was best for himself, for his career, for his family, coming to LA. I mean, there's no rules that he broke at all. But you can understand as a guest, you do want to be welcomed. So you can understand that part of things. You know, but as a competitor, he has to understand as well. You know, it's a little bit different on the other side of things. Basketball is over for Kobe. LeBron is still playing really well in his 17th year, and they're top of the West. There's got to be a little bit of...
And in the purple and gold.
A little bit of understanding about how... If anybody other than Bronny goes and leads the Cleveland Cavaliers to a championship, LeBron will be happy, but there'll be a little bit of a... But,
well, he might do it at least a few years from now. And right now, it's been announced that ESPN is planning to air 15 different high school basketball games featuring, of course, Bronny, LeBron James Jr., and Zaire Wade, Dwayne Wade's son. Their Sierra Canyon basketball team, the games are going to be on ESPN's affiliate networks starting later on in November. And Isaiah Thomas replied to this story saying, LOL, they got more than us. Isaiah Thomas of the Washington Wizards, not our Hall of Famer, Isaiah Thomas. What do you think about the response from a professional athlete talking about a high school team? And what do you think about a high school team being launched to this kind of platform so soon?
It's entertainment. So ESPN is providing people with what they want to see.
So you're telling me that the people don't want to see more of the Washington Wizards?
Kristen, actions speak louder than words.
That's fair.
Actions speak louder than words. That's what the people are saying. But in this day and age, you know, people are being interested in kids earlier and earlier, and they're deeming them superstars earlier and earlier. As we've seen with LeBron James Sr., there were so many games of his that were televised, and there were so many arenas.
Then do you think that he would want different for his son? Do you think that he would want him perhaps to be able to wait a little longer before being forced into that kind of spotlight?
Kristen, he turned out all right. Yeah, and I think that in the mind of LeBron James Jr., Bronny, is going to turn out all right as well. And, you know, I mean, Sierra Canyon played preseason games in China. How many kids?
This isn't a normal situation. High school basketball team.
And you want, I know as a mom, you want more for your kids than you had. And I think experience is everything, but just have to be careful because I think people's opinions on these kids are being shaped at an earlier age where they're not mature enough to handle a lot of this stuff. They're not mature enough to handle criticism.
But I would imagine most 14-year-olds aren't. Do you think then professional athletes like Isaiah Thomas, like we saw from his tweet, have a right to feel disrespected that this high school team is getting 15 nationally televised games and some NBA teams are getting, if half that?
People want to see these kids, and I think media, television, it all caters to what people want to see. The Pelicans didn't have very many games last year. They got Zion Williamson. Guess what? They have more games. So I think when you're exciting to watch and to see, you'll have more games. I mean, that's the rally cry of the WNBA right now. Kristen, you said it earlier, viewership is going up.
Without a doubt, and it's steadily gone up season after season, its highest being this season. So if that's what the fans want, why aren't we giving them more?
Speaking candidly on that, I think a lot has to do with, you know, you want to see a lot of people in the seats when you turn on a game. And so I think as we get more people in the stands and wanting to come to the arena to see the game, I think we'll get more games on television.
Trey from the Piston logo. Yes! A three-pointer for Trey Young. You are a cheat code.
We're welcoming in Trey Young, who, despite probably living just a few miles from here, did not invite us to his house. Hi, Trey.
Hey, how y'all doing?
He doesn't know how to respond to that, but it's fine.
Yeah,
we're available.
I don't know how to respond. Y'all are invited.
Oh, well, thank you, Trey.
Except tonight, apparently.
Yeah.
Trey, we've got to ask first and foremost about this tweet. In all caps, your apology needs to be as loud as the disrespect was. Now, you didn't tag anybody, so I want to know who this is directed at.
Oh, it's not necessarily directed at anybody specific. I mean, I think if you're in a position where you're thinking maybe he's talking about me, then maybe I am, maybe I'm not. I don't know. It was after an emotional game, emotional win on the road, and I just tweeted something emotional. So, I mean, that's just why I said it. So.
And one person really felt that tweet in Lamar Jackson. You know, he's having an outstanding season. Do you guys have a prior relationship?
Yeah. So I've talked to Lamar a couple times whenever I got drafted. Whenever we were both in college, I was we had talked a little bit. So we're fans of each other's games. We support each other, and we kind of have like a similar type of mindset when it comes to dealing with criticism and just the positions we were in coming into the league in both our sports. So we definitely have some similarities in our mindsets.
It's interesting when it comes to criticism and a high-profile athlete, which you now are. Some shrug off the hate. You seem, though, to be fueled by it. Am I right?
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's something that, I mean, I've had, I mean, coming into college, coming into the NBA, it's just something that's just been repeated over and over. And I'll just, instead of just, I mean, just shrugging it off and pushing it to the side, I'll just gravitate it and just use it as motivation and just use it to my advantage on fuel just to get me better and stuff that keeps me going. So,
a lot of things on the internet, especially after last year's draft, you and Luka Doncic will always be tied to each other in one way or another. Just from the trade that happened. And obviously, you guys being in the same draft class. I know Larry Bird and Magic Johnson a lot of times say that their careers were, you know, fueled by the other, that, you know, their competitive nature was fueled by one another, that they constantly checked the other stats and their wins. Is there a similar type of feud or fuel going on between you and Luka?
I mean, possibly. Possibly. It's crazy because, I mean, I've heard that comparison between the trade multiple times already. Of course, we both obviously would want to end up being Hall of Famers and all that, and the trade would be a crazy topic down the road. But I mean, it's early, but it definitely fuels. I think it motivates both of us. I mean, we talk all the time. He's a good dude. We are both pulling for each other because we both came out the same class too. So it's definitely, for me, I think it's a healthy, not competition, but it's kind of like we're both pushing each other. And I think it's bringing out the best of both of us.
What are some of those conversations like?
Oh, I mean, we both just want to see each other succeed. I mean, he's wishing me good luck. I'm wishing him the same. And if I have a crazy highlight, he'll send me some fire emojis or he'll compliment me on it or whatever. It's the same thing, vice versa. We got to know each other a lot, I mean, throughout the draft process and throughout the rookie transition camps and all that type of stuff that rookies go through. And ever since then, we've built a pretty close bond. So he's a really good dude.
You know, Trey, being in Atlanta and seeing, you know, your transition from even your rookie year into this year on the court, but also to see the way that the city of Atlanta and the way that you have embraced the city of Atlanta. I mean, the first time I saw you in the off season with your ice tray ice on your neck. I mean, your friends with Quavo was at the game in L.A. Can you speak to the culture in Atlanta and how much you really take in the city in?
Yeah, for sure. That's that's definitely something that, I mean, I'm priding myself in, and I'm trying to be a great example for the community, great example for the city. I mean, I know I'm not only representing myself and my family, but I'm representing the whole city. So that's something that, I mean, I wear on my sleeve proudly, and I try to be the best representative I can. And it's good to see, I mean, the support, and I love the culture here. I mean, just how tight-knit everybody is here, how supportive they are, the sports teams. And it's great to see, and I'm grateful to be a part of it, for sure.
And the team is undoubtedly fueled by you, but you're not what I would describe as a vocal leader, not even a very vocal guy, but your teammates are still looking to you. How would you describe your leadership style?
Yeah, for sure. I'm definitely continuing to get better on leading vocally, but I've always been a leader by example. Whether it's being the first one to the gym or last one to leave, or even when I got injured, just making sure I was always there for my treatment times, getting in extra work with the training staff, whatever it is, it's just trying to be the best leader by example that I can be. And obviously on the court, I'm getting better at leading vocally too. So it's definitely a process. It was different coming into the league, 19, 20 years old, having to try to lead grown men. It's definitely something that you got to transition into. So I'm getting a lot better, and still got a ways to go, but I'm getting there.
Well, Trey, I'll say I was just on the warm up with Smitty, and you know, spoiler alert, you made one of Smitty's top five under the rim plays with your nutmeg.
Oh, really?
Both of your nutmegs, one in Denver and the other one in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. What made you start doing that? It seems like it's kind of a regular part of your game, as I've seen this summer you doing the nutmeg. What is there a situation that you say, okay, I'm going to do this, or is it something that just happens?
The nutmeg, like I've done that since I was a kid. I've always done that. Thankfully I've played for coaches that, I mean, instill so much confidence in me where, I mean, I feel like if I can do whatever, on the court. And, it's really if I see one defender in front of me and I don't see anybody behind them and their legs are open, I just go between them. And
and then you just stare down at the bench.
Right, because that's a confident move. Mm. I mean, is it just solely to make a defender look dumb?
No, it's a it's something I use. Like, I mean, it helps me. I mean, sometimes there'll be two guys coming towards me. I'll be about to get doubled. And so I'll throw it between one of the defender's legs before the double team gets there. Or whatever it is. If I'm on the sideline and I'm about to go over a screen and they're forcing me over, I'll throw between it if I want to reject it. So reject the screen. So it's something I actually use for my advantage, not just to showboat or anything like that. It's something I actually, think can help me.
See, Candace, it's a strategic nutmeg, not a showboating nutmeg. We were debating prior to the show.
Okay.
It's very true, because Coach Summit, I played for Coach Summit, and if I would have tried to nutmeg, well, I wouldn't have nutmegged as good as Trey did. But if it was unsuccessful, oh, man, it was going to hear the scores
this
table.
This season,
oh,
then,
yeah, no,
you should
I definitely get nervous. I definitely get nervous if it's unsuccessful on what's going to happen. But
yeah, the stakes are high. The stakes are high with a nutmeg, because it's not just making a defender look dumb if it's successful. If it's unsuccessful, I mean, you know, you kind of look dumb.
Yeah.
Well, so far his nutmegs have been very successful this season.
Very
I'll say
successful.
That.
Yeah,
how though, so Trey, far. Do you pull away from all of that? Do you silence the noise? Do you just relax and get away from basketball when you're in Atlanta?
Yeah, so for me, I'm a very low key guy. I love to go to movies. I love to go to Topgolf. I can't golf, so I go to Topgolf just to embarrass myself a little bit, but and get away from basketball and all the outside noise and stuff like that. My family's around all the time. So it's good to just have my circle with me, and I'm able to relax too. So, but I'm a big movies person, so I'm usually at a theater somewhere.
Well, you're a huge jump from your rookie year to this year. And if I remember correctly, you quoted that coming into this year, you knew what you had to work on. You knew you wanted to add to your mid-range game. You knew you wanted to be able to get a little bit stronger in finishing. Can you talk about the advantage of having that experience under your belt? Because your growth from year one to year two has been outstanding.
Yeah, no, for sure. I feel like... Like you said, that's why I feel like I made my big jump. I mean, coming in as a rookie, it's hard to really know what to work on, know what to expect. And you're kind of just going into a season against the best players in the world, not knowing really how to handle it or like what's gonna come your way. So knowing how to handle back-to-backs, knowing how to handle long road trips, I think really, I mean, has worked to my advantage, and it's really helped my year start off better this year than it did last year.
Who were some of the guys that you did look up to that even last year maybe caused you to pause when you stepped on the floor and saw that guy was now your own opponent?
Yeah. I mean, it was a couple guys for me. Obviously, growing up, watching Steph play, just going up against him for the first time was crazy. And then I grew up in OKC, going to Thunder games, being able to spend some time with KD and Russ after games, things like that. And when I was in high school, so being able to go up against them, having to guard Russ, was definitely something different and something that, I mean, was surreal. I mean, early on in my career, so. It was crazy at first, but now it's more just hooping now, so it's different.
It just makes me sad to hear him describe players he grew up watching.
Listen,
they're my age.
Listen, Kristen.
Right?
The biggest, like, what hurts my heart is the first time I met Trey was like, yeah, I grew up watching you. And I was like,
what?
But just stop.
Don't say that to me.
You can't say grew up. Like, that's not, okay. Do you realize? And you'll understand when you get to be my age. How
that
feels.
Still a long way off.
Thanks, Kristen. Thanks, teammate. No, but Trey, you know, Steph and you, everybody draws the comparison of you and Steph. And obviously, you know, we've seen your 30-foot, 35-foot threes from the season, the percentage that you shoot that at, and the similarities between you and Steph's game. But can you tell me, how is your game different than Steph?
I mean, I think there's a bunch of different similarities. I mean, a bunch of differences. I think for me, it's a lot more... I mean, early on in Steph's career, it was a lot of, I mean, shooting off the dribble. But now, I mean, you watch him play. They're a big motion offense team. He's getting a lot of pin down screens. He's running off flares. He's doing a lot of shooting off the catch. And for me, I'm more in a pick and roll. Getting downhill, shooting more threes off the dribble. I mean, as of right now. And so I think for me, that's a little bit of a difference as of right now and in our styles of game.
You were just in L.A. The reason you said you couldn't come into the studio tonight. However, what was it like to get the chance to spend a little bit of time with Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gigi sitting courtside?
Yeah, no, it was really cool. After the game, I mean, obviously after a tough loss, It was tough, and then I walked to the back, and first dude I seen was Kobe. So being able to spend some time with him, talk to him a little bit, and then I met Gigi. He was telling me how I'm one of Gigi's favorite players to watch, and which was pretty cool because sometimes I see her highlights pop up every now and then on my Twitter timeline, and she's already nicer than everybody in her grade everybody 2-3 years older than her. So,
well, now you're gonna feel how we feel when she says I watched you growing up. So, there's your medicine.
Trey, we're gonna let you go. We're gonna let you go, but we are taking your invitation to your home seriously, and we're on our way.
Yep, we're coming.
Okay,
all right. See you soon.
Sounds good. See y'all soon.
All right, good luck, Trey. Stay healthy, man.
Thanks, Trey.
All right. Bye.
Another big topic coming in off this weekend was Colin Kaepernick getting a workout with the NFL. You know, it's a story that dominated the sports Twitter over the weekend, Jay-Z and Roger Goodell being behind the tryout. Supposed to happen in Atlanta. Supposed to be no media. Then there was media going to be allowed. And then the workout changed locations last minute. Kristen? The last 3 years, Colin Kaepernick has been out of the league.
And in full disclosure, I don't watch the NFL. I don't prefer to watch the NFL.
Love your honesty.
I enjoy football, and I watch college football from the moment I wake up until the moment I go to sleep on Saturdays. So I wouldn't know if physically, right now, Colin Kaepernick is any better or any worse than any one of their 32 quarterbacks or any one of their backups or any one of their third stringers. I've obviously followed this story as it's been a headline for the last 3 years, but I want to know from you, then, as someone who not only watches the NFL but has also followed the story very closely, is this more about his physical ability or about shifting the perception or simply about the perception that already exists?
This was a tryout. Not about ability, if I can say it in that way. I don't think anybody has doubted Colin's ability, even 3 years removed from the NFL. I think this was, its purpose was to bring attention to the fact that Colin Kaepernick still does not have a job, and let alone a job, teams were scared to even be the first to work him out. And in somehow, some way, being able to do this, Jay-Z, Roger Goodell, their influence to bring attention to that kind of help smooth things over and maybe get a bunch of scouts in a place where everybody can see him at once. But this was never about ability. I mean, nobody doubts his arm strength. Nobody doubts his ability on field. And
then do you think this perhaps shifted the perception of him off the field?
No, this did not shift the perception of him off the field. You know, in right or wrong, Colin Kaepernick has stayed true to what he believes. There's a lot of people that they serve their purpose over time. They kind of get out what they want. They draw attention to something, and then they change their tone because it doesn't serve them at this point in time. Colin Kaepernick called out the owners and said, go back and tell your owners, don't be scared.
I've been ready for 3 years. I've been denied for 3 years. We all know why I came out here, showed it today in front of everybody. We have nothing to hide. So we're waiting for the 32 owners, the 32 teams, Roger Goodell, all of them to stop running. Stop running from the truth. Stop running from the people.
He wore a Kunta Kinte shirt to this workout. I don't know if he's changed his tone, and I don't think he ever will. And to me, love him or hate him, I don't think he's going to be Colin Kaepernick.
How then does the perception of a person affect the value we place on that person as an athlete?
The perception drives everything. I mean, it drives your career. It drives what people think of you. It drives public opinion.
Well, because I don't think that right and wrong changes, but I do think that the narrative surrounding what's right now and what's wrong right now absolutely does.
Well, in 20 years, time will tell. I do believe that in 20 years, especially now, we see people supporting Cap and rocking Kaepernick jerseys and things like that. I mean, hell, 20, 30 years ago, did we think of what we think of Muhammad Ali and Bill Russell? Did we think of them that way? No. I mean, Cassius Clay was thought to be crazy. How could you dishonor your country to not enlist in the army and go over there and fight for it? And now, only now, are people commending him and basically saying how much of a hero and a martyr he was. Same thing with Bill Russell. I mean, Boston was one of the most segregated places in the United States. And he, look what he's done for the advancement of civil rights. We didn't think of him that way back then. But now perception has changed and they're considered heroes. And I just continue to really want to be on the right side of history and really ask yourself, like, in 20, 30 years, is this really what the perception is going to be?
What do you think the perception of Cap will be 20 years from now?
I do believe he'll be thought of as a martyr and somebody that sacrificed their career for a cause that was bigger than them. And this never started off as about disrespecting America. It started off as bringing attention to the fact that, you know, we had to pay attention to police brutality. But I guess only time will tell.
Speaking of Bill Russell, he was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame back in 1975, but he didn't accept his ring. He felt like he shouldn't have been the first black inductee. He tweeted, though, as he has finally accepted his Hall of Fame ring, he said, "I felt that others before me should have that honor. It's good to see progress." Chuck Cooper, Hall of Fame 19. Chuck Cooper, of course, the first black athlete drafted into the NBA. He was inducted into the Hall this year. The NBA has, for so long, been in the forefront of athletes being activists and fighting for what they believe is right. I met a lot of Chuck's family at the Hall of Fame induction ceremony just earlier this fall, and they told me how long the fight felt, how long it felt as though they had been fighting for Chuck to be acknowledged as part of the Hall of Fame. And now that he is, of course, Bill has decided to accept his ring. What, though, Candace, do you feel like is the expectation for athletes to not only perform on the court, but off the court as well, as activists or as role models, right or wrong?
Well, as perception goes, public opinion goes, at first it was athletes just need to focus on being athletes. And we love the people that just shut up and did their job, just went out there and just performed and ignored their platform and their visibility to promote good change or change that they feel necessary. And now we've kind of switched gears into the fact that if people don't speak on certain things or don't speak up, public opinion shifts on that.
They're shirking their responsibility.
Exactly. And so I think that there's a balance. I do believe that you should do what you feel is right and you should use your intention and those type of guides to speak on certain points or, you know, speak on social injustices, but at the same time, you shouldn't have to. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in using your platform to make things better for the generation following you.
Because when we look back at Bill Russell, not only will he have more championship rings than he does fingers, and he's now accepted his Hall of Fame ring, we'll think far more about what he did off the court in a city where I would imagine the majority wanted not only not to root for him, but for him not to be there simply because he showed up in green and thought, this platform can be used for more than just myself.
And now, one of my favorite segments.
Mine too.
The Ledlow Down.
The Ledlow Down.
So, Kristen, what's the Ledlow Down?
You look really cool when you say it, first and foremost.
Thanks.
But we've talked a lot about these veteran players getting second chances, getting second opportunities with franchises that are competing for championships. I was in Denver this past week, and the Brooklyn Nets were also there. They not only reached out to Iman Shumpert, signed Iman Shumpert, put Iman Shumpert through his stress and conditioning test, and made Iman Shumpert available in about a 48-hour period. I ran into Iman before the game, and I asked him how he was feeling, and he laughed, and he was tired. Like, it was a lot. But after the game, I asked Kyrie what it meant to have a guy that he had won a championship alongside.
You know, we'll see. I mean, obviously, it's good to have a friend here, you know, alongside with other great teammates, but it's just more or less the understanding of the game that he brings and what he brings on the court and also his voice off the court. I know those guys will, you know, get great joy and also learn a lot from just having a wing out there and a guy that's played high-level basketball. So.
How much, Candace, do you think is this signing about what he can bring to the Nets physically and about being Kyrie's friend and a guy who's won at the highest level with the guy you're running the majority of your offense through?
I think it's a combination. You know, people underestimate how important it is to like your teammates. It's very important. in culture. It's very important in building championship brand of basketball. I mean, everybody wants to like who you work with. It would really suck if I didn't like you, Kristen.
I like you also.
It would really suck if we were not friends.
I'm glad that we established it into the microphone.
Exactly. But I do believe Iman Shumpert brings basketball to the table. I mean, this isn't, you know, them just signing to have him be in the locker room.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. This is a guy. While they're riddled with injuries on their roster, especially while Caris LeVert is out, that gives you some perimeter defense that has the ability to shoot when needed, but isn't going to be looked to do that either.
Yeah, and is somebody that had success last year with the Sacramento Kings before he was traded to Houston. He's played championship basketball within the last couple of years. He's that 3-point, 3-and-D guy that you need on your team, and I think he'll thrive in a system like Brooklyn that, you know, thrives on isolations with Kyrie but needs shooters around him. Do you think there's anything to make of Kyrie saying it's good to have a friend here?
I would imagine he knows that his team hears what he says to the media. I don't think, though, that he was implying that any of his other teammates aren't his friends. But we've already heard these reports that these guys are feeding off of his energy, and it's not always a consistent energy. So I don't think that you have anything but to gain by signing someone he considers a friend. I'm not going to say the Ledlow and Parker podcast called it, but
Woj reporting that Portland is signing Carmelo Anthony.
The Ledlow and Parker podcast called it. And now we know that Melo is a listener. Does he subscribe?
Yeah, he subscribes. I made sure of it.
Because you ran into him.
Coincidence, I think not.
Yeah.
I was, you know, just at a wine tasting, which is one of my favorite things to do in Los Angeles.
Same, but yeah. Anywhere.
And Mello happened to be there. We were doing Dom Perignon, Parker Wines. It was an amazing dinner. And when I showed up, that was the first thing he said. He said, "I listened to your podcast." And I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "You and Kristen's podcast." He's like, I listened to it. I appreciate it. I was like, "What do you mean?" He was like, "Well, you know, I'm with the Portland Trailblazers now." And I was like, "Yeah, I know." He's like, "No, but I hear you and I respect it," which meant a lot to me. And then what do I do, Kristen?
Well, you immediately FaceTime me, which I appreciate that you are really my only friend besides my mom that chooses to call as regularly as you do rather than simply send a text message. But you FaceTime me while I didn't realize it was a FaceTime at first. I just see that you're calling. So I push the green button and I'm in the Brooklyn Nets.
I'm a FaceTimer.
Locker.
I'm a FaceTimer.
You
okay.
Are. I like that.
Yeah, I'm a FaceTimer.
Because I like seeing you.
Okay.
Well,
but just
except
not
when I'm in the Brooklyn Nets locker room and they've just lost to the Denver Nuggets. Not only lost, but blew a 16-point lead, I believe it was.
Yeah, you answered in a whisper and I was just kind of like, okay, well, I have good news. Saw Melo. He's going to come on the podcast eventually. That's first. Second of all, he listens to our podcast and subscribes.
And as you mentioned, not only was I whispering, but that means, you know how close you have to hold the phone to whisper into a FaceTime.
And so then I tried to whisper because I didn't want to be really loud.
She's whispering into a screen showing her a very close-up version of my chin because I'm supposed to be doing a job. However, I was really excited to hear that Melo actually listened and now subscribes and now is going to be on the show.
Yes, it's going to happen. But hopefully, you know, into the season, having a successful season with the Trailblazers, which I'm going to predict.
That was going to be my next question. Will he finish this season with the Portland Trailblazers?
Prior to Melo being available, the Blazers are 5-8. They're about to start a 6-game road trip. And I think that there's no better time to add Melo to the team. You know, these things can go one of two ways. I don't know if it's going to be a similar situation like it was in Houston, where he was a part of it from the beginning and he kind of was the person that they blamed for the problems. They're already having problems.
Yeah.
And so it's either going to stay the same or get better. And I do believe that he is going to be able to be that third guy. Obviously, it's going to take patience. But let's be honest, Portland is number two in volume isolation plays behind Houston.
Yeah.
Who uses that as their game plan.
Right.
And I think that this is perfect. Melo isos.
Well, and Houston surrounds those guys by shooters. Can't Melo be one of those shooters for CJ and Dame?
I think Melo will be one of those shooters at the four position. I don't believe that he will start, which I think he is okay with, but I do believe that he will close and finish a lot of games. And to me, as we've seen with Lou Williams, as we've seen with Jamal Crawford, as we've seen with Ginobili, it really doesn't matter who starts a game. It's who's in there at the end when you're finishing.
And why not go out there and cook a couple second units?
Exactly. Right? And he always thrives on one thing you can count on Melo. I don't care if he's 35 years old or not. He is a bucket. And I think this is a perfect storm and that Portland does need somebody to come in and give them help. And I think Melo is at a place in his career where he's ready to do that and be that guy. And it's a perfect locker room in terms of culture. I mean, Dame Lillard is one of the best guys in the NBA. CJ McCollum seems like they just want to win. There's mutual respect. So I think it's going to be a good situation. Kristen, you cover a lot of West Coast games. You know, there's a huge possibility you're going to be covering Melo in the near future. When you're interviewing him post-game, what would you ask him?
I think at this point in his career, I'd want to know, after having been away from the league for an entire year, stepping into this situation, how his mentality has shifted. Because there are so many talking heads, us included, talking about our expectations for this next season, not only of his career, but of his life. And I'd want to know how he's approaching it different mentally this time around. That'll do it for episode 4. Episode 5, though, we can't tell them yet.
Oh, man, I'm so excited.
No, we can't tell them yet. We cannot tell them yet. I think the only way that I could possibly tease it is that we were asked to present our heroes, and this name made the list. And when we called, she answered, and she said yes.